Well, it's very quiet around the streets of Salford and Greater Manchester in general. I think there's a game on the telly. But you're not watching it, or maybe you are, but you're listening to me. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. Thanks for choosing me.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome to the program. I'll be discussing medical tyranny with at least one doctor later on in the program. There's a brilliant article written by Sally Beck in The Conservative Woman last month, but a disturbing article about how some doctors are being targeted for things like recommending vitamins and fresh air to their patients. Honestly, being targeted, some fear they'll be struck off the register. I'll have at least one doctor on the programme to talk about that. Don't miss it, that's coming up in the second hour. Before that, I received an email over the weekend from Gabby Linford, a lovely lady. Gabby is Australian and has worked in the live music business for some time. She's a roadie in the rock and roll touring industry, and her other half is a rigger, or was a rigger as well. They're very worried that, well, riggers and people who work in the live music industry, well, they might become redundant if they don't take a vaccine. There's evidence is emerging that road crew will be expected to take vaccines. Gabby is very interesting. We'll talk to her this hour. Lots more coming up between now and 7 o'clock on your Richie Allen Show. Ah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not watching Game, and I don't even have Game on telly in studio. I don't. Honestly, I've not got anything. I love my football, you know, so I would like to be watching the game with a large Bacardi and Coke. But I have a duty to my listeners. So I'm going to virtue signal to the moon now. You're lucky to have me today. You're not really. It's not Ireland. It's not Manchester United. So I'm here with you. I'll keep an eye on the score. I'll check the score maybe after I chat with Gabby and before I speak with the doctor or doctors. Yes, are you well? It's BBG Richie. That is my Twitter thing. Tweet me. Also, contact me through the website richieallen.co.uk. Blanket coverage of the game. The game, of course, is the last 16 of the European Championships. England are playing Germany at Wembley right now. Blanket coverage of it today. Not that we care, but the BBC is the wokest organisation on God's green earth. It really is. Now, you might know this, you might not. In the last couple of years, the BBC has effectively made a lot of male football pundits redundant. Now, not all of them were brilliant, admittedly, but some were pretty good. They made a lot of male football pundits redundant, and they replaced them with women. And if you listen to BBC Radio 5 Live these days, before some very big games, say Manchester United versus Liverpool, say, they will interview fans, like two fans together, one Scouser and one Mancunian. And these days, it's usually women. I find this very funny. As a football fan, I don't care who the pundit is, as long as they're interesting. But these days, it's almost, well, 60% women or 65% women, 35% men. It's very strange. And if you visited this planet from your own planet, you might be from planet Zog, you'd believe that the game was dominated by female fans, which it isn't. It's real woke bollocks. It really is. Now, it went up a level today. Listen to this. This is BBC News 24, about 10 minutes to 3 this afternoon. The wokeness went up to a new level. A BBC presenter is coming out of an update from a guy who is at Wembley. You will hear her thank the on-the-spot reporter, and then she introduces two fans, one English and one German. This takes wokeness to a whole new level.
Come to fruition on the pitch here at Wembley.
Absolutely. John, good to talk to you, and we'll catch up later. Thanks. Well, the game and the result may well cause some division in one household in East London. Fiona Macara is an England fan, while her girlfriend, Lavinia Hahn, is a Germany fan.
We've got a random fan, a female fan from London, an England fan, and her German girlfriend.
And I'm delighted to say they join us live now.
Lesbians!
Great to have you with us. I wonder, Fiona, perhaps starting with you, what are your thoughts ahead of the game?
This is brilliant.
Oh, it's a big match, isn't it, playing against Germany. Possibly our best chance in years with the young raft of attacking players, but I don't think we can discount Germany. You know, they're a big game team, and it will certainly be a very, very tough match.
What about you, Lavinia?
Lavinia is German.
Well, given on the Germans' performance in the tournament so far, I'm a bit nervous. I think in previous tournaments I would be a bit more optimistic, but I think overall Germany can certainly do this, and I'm excited for the game.
Men are being erased from the BBC.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering what the consequences are, because obviously one of you is going to go home unhappy. So, Lavinia, perhaps you first of all. What if Germany lose?
Please God they do.
We won't.
We won't.
But, no, I think it'll be all right. If there's a bit too much mocking maybe afterwards, that might go, might not.
If there's a bit too much mocking afterwards, someone is spending the night on the sofa.
It might not go down too well, but I think our relationship is stronger than a football match, so I think it'll be fine.
Their relationship is stronger than a football match. That German girl speaks great English, doesn't she, eh? She's a cunning linguist, you might say. You might say, all right, move on, stop now. You'll get yourself into trouble 7 minutes past five. But there is a real issue there. I did say cunning linguist. There is a real issue there. It's like when you turn on, like we watched a drama recently, The Cottage thing. Murder at the Cottage, about the murder of Sophie Duplantier. Sophie Toscan Duplantier, yes. The young French woman who was murdered in West Cork in 1996. We watched it. And there are ad breaks during it. And in the ad breaks, every couple seems to be mixed race. And every other couple appears to be gay. Now, listen, if you're brand new to the programme, you might be forgiven for thinking that I'm some sort of bigoted, homophobic arsehole. No, I'm not. But I am somebody who regularly screams at the programming, at the manipulation that I am subjected to. I don't have many gay friends, but I love my gay friends. I don't have many black friends, well, I hardly have any at all, but I have one or two Pakistani friends, and I love them as well. It's the nonsensical aspect of it. I know that the vast majority of couples in the UK or people are with partners from the same ethnic group. I know this. But if you watch advertisements on ITV Channel 4 or Sky, well, you'd be forgiven again if you came from Planet Zog for believing that every couple in the country is mixed race. It's madness. There's no need for it, is what I'm saying. Men are being erased. We're being erased. Go on, England, anyway. Hey, listen, we'll come to Chris Whitty shortly, England's chief medical officer. Hang on, you salivating pups. I know some of you have been arguing with me on Twitter today. I'll tell you what's going on with Chris Whitty. Well, of course I won't, because I don't know anything. I'll give you my opinion shortly. Now, it's 9 minutes past five. There are 46 people in hospital in Ireland, allegedly with coronavirus. 46 now, out of a population of 4.3 million. And 16 of the 46 are in intensive care. And that's according to the Irish government website this afternoon. Yes. Now, Irish hospitality, restaurants and bars were hoping to open up next week, open up to serving people indoors and make a few bob, because they're on their arse. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin has said today that there will be a delay to indoor hospitality opening, a delay beyond the planned reopening, which was due to take place next Monday. Okay? So next Monday, Irish restaurants and bars expected to serve people indoors. The Irish Taoiseach Micheál Martin, an insufferable gobshin, announced today there will be a delay, but he hasn't put a time frame on it, leaving everybody in limbo. Here he is, the Irish PM, Micheál Martin himself.
Last night, we were advised by public health officials in very stark terms that proceeding exactly as planned on the 5th of July carries a real risk of greatly increased spread of the virus, increased hospital admissions, illness and death. Last night and this morning, the government has examined this advice and agreed to delay some elements of the further reopening scheduled for the 5th of July. There will be an increase in the number of people attending outdoor events, and given its very special nature, the numbers of guests attending weddings can increase to 50 as planned. However, a return to other indoor activities, including hospitality, will be delayed. NPHET's clear advice, based on the modelling it has done, is that given the increased transmissibility of the Delta variant, the safest way to now proceed with a return to indoor hospitality is to limit access to those who have been fully vaccinated or have recovered from COVID infection.
Isn't that lovely? This is tyranny broadcast by the Irish Taoiseach with no shame, with no fear of consequence, addressing the nation and saying, you can have your restaurant meal indoors so long as you're double vaccinated and prove to us that you've had coronavirus. Yeah. Yeah, there's no need for me to say any more. Here's more of him, Micheál Martin.
Over the course of the coming weeks, government will work urgently with the relevant sectors to agree a practical and workable approach. The simple truth is that we are in a race between the variant and vaccines.
A race.
And we want to do everything we possibly can to make sure that the vaccine wins.
Yeah, there are 46 people in the country currently occupying a hospital bed who allegedly have COVID, allegedly because the testing is, well, has been thoroughly debunked. And only 16 of those out of a country of 4.3 million are in ICU. But this guy is telling you horseshit about a race between vaccines and a variant. And he's getting away with it, amazingly.
4 million doses of vaccine have already been administered.
they've already given 4 million doses.
And each additional week means that hundreds of thousands of additional vaccines can be given to people. The updated advice from the National Immunisation Advisory Council and the wider range of options that it now gives our extraordinary vaccination team is very welcome. It means that many people will now get fully vaccinated sooner. And it means that, supplies permitting, we can get more people vaccinated more quickly than before.
Yeah, it's all in. It's lockstep is the buzzword here. It's exactly what they've been saying in the UK. Right, there's no coincidence there, nor is the Irish Taoiseach Micheál Martin simply copying Boris Johnson. Those guys don't make the rules. Those guys don't dream up the policies. They are doing what they are told, and they are getting exactly the same instructions. We want more people vaccinated, so blackmail them by refusing to release all of these draconian illegal restrictions until they roll up their sleeves and come forward. That's what's going on. Anything else from the Taoiseach?
The vaccines are safe. They work.
Don't know how he said that with a straight face, by the way.
And when your chance comes, please take your vaccine.
It's just the same bullshit we've been getting from Boris Johnson, previously Matt Hancock, now the new Health Secretary Sajid Javid. It is crap. Right, let's move on. 14 minutes past 5 o'clock. It's the Richie Allen Show, live this Tuesday, the 29th of June. It's currently England 0, the Germans 0. The Germans. This is important of sorts, right? Police are investigating video footage which went viral, which shows or appears to show the chief medical officer for England, Chris Whitty, being jostled and harangued by two men in a park. The UK Prime Minister, UK Prime Minister, yeah, that would be right, the UK Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, said that he was shocked at the despicable harassment of his good friend, Professor Whitty. The video shows two guys joking, laughing and jeering as they grab hold of Whitty, who struggles to free himself. The Met Police said it happened in St. James's Park on Sunday and that they spoke to everyone involved. Okay. Other MPs have criticised it. The new health secretary, the aforementioned Sajid Javid, said it was appalling and totally unacceptable. So what actually happened then? Were these guys making some anti-lockdown point to Whitty, or were they just a couple of idiots looking for a selfie? Let's have a listen for the crack to LBC radio presenter James O'Brien.
I think it looks like, and I have a modicum of experience of both of these phenomena, the people who really, really don't like you because of what you stand for, in Chris Whitty's case, science, knowledge, expertise, evidence. In my case, decency, compassion, anti-racism, liberalism. And people who really, really don't like you harassing you in the street and sticking a phone in your face, right? That's not what happened to Chris Whitty. And I also have a modicum of experience of people who've had a few recognising you off Facebook or the telly and
I doubt that.
And boisterously trying to get a selfie or kind of give you a bit of a bear hug, which is fine if you're in a pub garden and the football's on, but it's not fine if you're in your suit and you're walking through St. James's Park on your way back from a tough shift at work.
A tough shift at work, Chris Whitty. A tough shift at work. Give me a break. If James O'Brien was a chalk ice, he would lovingly lick himself for 30 seconds a day and then return the chalk ice himself to the freezer. Nobody has ever... This is narcissism on steroids.
The people who really, really don't like you because of what you stand for, in Chris Whitty's case, science, knowledge, expertise, evidence.
In Chris Whitty's case, science. But in your own case...
Evidence. In my case, decency, compassion, anti-racism, liberalism...
He's a decent, compassionate, anti-racist liberal. That's James O'Brien speaking about himself. Like I said, chalk ice in the freezer. What an arsehole. Here's more from O'Brien.
I think the question of whether or not this is linked to the very irresponsible journalism that we've seen, alleged journalism that we've seen over the last year, has been answered. I don't think this is a consequence of columnists calling him Dr. Doom or various self-appointed people who simultaneously appear on every television station and radio programme on the planet while claiming to be cancelled. Those kind of people.
Christ, he drones on. O'Brien's point is that these are just a couple of drunks who saw somebody they recognise, somebody who's moderately famous these days because he's never off the telly, and decided to have a go with him. Right, I wrote about this today from the point of view, and I don't know, James O'Brien might actually be right. It might have been a pair of idiots who recognised Whitty and jumped on him. Now, some of, I don't know if I can say our listeners, but people who follow me on Twitter were quick to say that I'm a bit of an idiot, that this was obviously staged. Obviously. It's obviously staged, Richie, without providing any proof that it was staged. So am I saying that it wasn't? Well, I couldn't prove that it wasn't staged. But I hear from the same people, and I have been hearing from the same people every year now, since about 2009, who tell me that everything that happens was staged. Every terrorist attack was staged. Every stabbing was staged. It's all a hoax. It's all crisis actors and all of this fucking nonsense. That's not to say that certain things are not staged. I'm sure they are. But not everything is staged. Not everything is set up. So I don't know if it was staged or not. The central point I wanted to make was that, in my opinion, and I've said this since I've been on radio, violence is wrong. Some of you said these guys weren't being violent to Chris Whitty. Listen, when you jump around a guy and grab him in a headlock and put your arms around him, that's an assault. Regardless of how severe it is, it's not smashing a guy in the nose and causing his nose to bleed. It's not kicking him or booting him when he's on the ground. Of course it isn't, but it's an assault. And it's wrong. It's always wrong. It's only ever defensible. It's only ever justifiable when you are defending yourself. That is my opinion. It'll always be my opinion. And I wrote about this on the website today. I said it 1,000 times in the last 15 months. Chris Whitty is a liar. He's a charlatan. He's a dangerous man. And if I had my way, Whitty would be in chains. He'd be in manacles, awaiting trial. But he would get a fair trial. If I had my way, he would get an absolute King Solomon, King David fair trial. With access to a competent legal team to answer the charges levied against him. Namely, that the things that have happened in the last 15 months that have killed God knows how many people, suicides, depression, loss of income, job disappearing, all the stuff that Whitty knows he knew when he encouraged the government last year to impose lockdowns on the country, I would put him on trial for it, given the opportunity. But jumping around him and chasing him down streets and grabbing him around the neck is unacceptable, regardless of what you think he's done or hasn't done. And I'll always believe that. It's pathetic. And ultimately, it's what they ultimately want to drive people to do. They want to make people so angry, so full of rage, so full of hatred, that people do start assaulting people like Chris Whitty and others. Because that's the problem reaction solution thing. They've always got the solution for that. Always. That's my final word on it. You think what you like about it. You're entitled to your opinion. Jumping around guys and grabbing them in headlocks, whether it was staged or not. You know, gathering outside a guy's house, calling him a murderer and a traitor while his family are inside. No thanks. And I mentioned in my article, I meet a lot of people who are just about beginning to understand that something is wrong. And they are exceptionally new, extremely new to the independent media. And these people are generally terrified by the vacuum that would be left if, as I put it in my article today, if we put the run on these tyrants, these governments and their scientific advisors. People wonder, what will fill that vacuum? Will it be thugs? Will it be Tommy Robinson's mates? That sort of scum, you know, football hooligans. Because Middle England looks at Johnson and Whitty and Valance and Hancock and Javitt, and they're now starting to realise that something is very badly wrong. But they also wonder, in the absence of these people, who's going to look after me? Scumbags that, you know, attack the political editor of Newsnight. That sort of scum. Will they fill the void? And that's a great or a grave concern for a lot of people. The only answer to this, and you don't want to hear it because you haven't really ultimately, I don't think, come to terms with the logic of it and the undeniable nature of it. The only way to deal with these people is for massive non-violent civil disobedience. It's the only way. But most people are not ready for that. And of course, it's very difficult to achieve that because most of us in our neighbourhoods, in our communities, whether it's in England, Salford, whether it's in Birmingham, whether it's in Galway or in Dublin, most of us have become so disconnected from the people we share our lives with, namely our neighbours, completely disconnected to the point where we don't know their names or their children's names or what they do for a living. It makes it very, very difficult. Non-violent civil disobedience. But it's the only way. That's my opinion. 24 minutes past the hour. Let's take a track and let's get my first guest on the programme. Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford this Tuesday. It's been a very warm day. The sun has got his hat on. This is Fleetwood Mac then. Back in 3 minutes. Stay with me. First Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop. 26 minutes past five. The Richie Allen Show. And there's still no goals in the footy. I'll leave it there. No more footy talk. I had a lovely email from Gabriella on Sunday. She said, Richie, I'm a woman from Australia who has spent the past 12 years based in the UK and working as a roadie in the rock and roll touring industry. My other half was a rigger and has been touring for 20 years also. We met working on a Roger Waters gig back in 2012. We've toured the world together, living the rock and roll lifestyle and making a good living out of it as well. Gabriella said, Richie, I was supposed to be on tour with Eric Clapton last year, but obviously everything with the whole scamdemic, that didn't happen. Interesting that he's now speaking out against the insanity. And Gabriella went on to say that she's recently started to get invited back out onto tours in America and in Europe, but has had to turn them down based on the fact that she hasn't had the jab. Venues in the States and around the world are now, basically demanding that you've got to be jabbed to enter. So the reality of the situation has hit home for Gabriella. And I think I can call you Gabby. Welcome to the programme, Gabby. How are you doing? Thanks for the email, by the way.
Hi, Richie. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I didn't realise I'd written so much. It was sort of in the whirlwind.
It was an epic. It was
the morning after the rally.
Yeah, it was like War and Peace. It took me about an hour and a half to read it. No, it didn't. But I suppose we can start there before we talk about the music industry and what this might mean for you and others. You did. Mm-hmm. You were in London on Saturday. And I understand from the photographs I saw and the videos, you're looking at hundreds of thousands. What was it like being there, Gabby?
Yeah, it was incredible, actually. I was sort of I've been tempted to go before in the past, but just never really had the kick up the arse to go, really. And always felt like I was doing enough just day to day, you know, living the resistance really, without putting masks on and all that bollocks. And but yeah, after having to turn down a pretty good looking tour and realizing the reality of the situation, we drove about 400 miles that day to get there, and we're about an hour late, but we caught up with them. We sort of followed the choppers around. We could see them in the distance over the city and sort of followed where they were and then found it. And we reached the crowd at, I think it was at Monument, and there was a truck set up with the sides open and people like raving inside, and there was a fair amount of people were like, oh yeah, this is decent, but it wasn't massive. Then we turned a corner in the street and started following the crowd, and then it just, yeah, the scale of it really like hit home. We're both like, holy shit. Sorry, I can swear, kind of.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I say we're past the watershed in China. We're past the watershed in Australia. So what, you got something out of it, didn't you? Spiritually, it did something for you.
Yeah, massive vibe boost, to be honest, which is kind of just what I was after. Like, I'm not sure how much, you know, obviously the media ignore it, and I'm not sure how much the politicians pay any attention to it. But as far as like, you know, that sense of unity and solidarity, and just, yeah, it was actually, I forgot how fun partying was, really. I just danced the whole way along down the street, you know, and yeah, just lots of people smiling and having a really good time, and it was just like a massive street party, and yeah, I was absolutely buzzing. I felt literally like high.
Do you know, there must be
energy, and it's been so long since I've felt that, to be honest. I just realized, you know,
Gareth Sykes touched on this on Thursday, because I've never criticized people going to protests. I think absolutely damn right, you do whatever you want. My only thing has been about what comes after that. But anyway, we're not going to get into that. Gareth Sykes put me straight on Thursday. He said to me, well, Richie, there are a lot of people, not like you, Gabby, but others who might live alone, or they might live where they are surrounded by people that are completely with the agenda. And yeah, to go down to London for some of these protests and to actually spend time with people who understand it, what's happening, is a huge thing. And I suppose I didn't consider that until he said it to me on Thursday. You were surrounded on Saturday by level-headed people who can think for themselves, Gabby.
Yeah, and not your, you know, people would think they're just a bunch of lunatic conspiracy theorists, but there were, you know, old people, there were, you know, young children, they were just the most normal, most lovely, you know. It was a celebration as much as it was a protest, you know. It was really happy energy, you know, and a good variety of people. And it was good that the highlight was probably sticker bombing a COVID test center.
I saw that. There was quite a bit of sticker bombing going on. There was a COVID test centre sticker bombed. There were some police vehicles sticker bombed as well. I saw that. Yeah. What sort of messages were on the stickers?
Oh, it was all those join the white rose stickers. Oh, all sorts. You know.
Brilliant.
I can't think of any off the top of my head, but you know.
Now I want to talk to you about your job. The reason you emailed me, first of all, I'm not lying when I say you've been doing for years my fantasy job. as a fan of rock music, I could think of nothing better than, you know, travelling around the world with great musicians. And I mean, the crack must be incredible amongst the crew. I've read so many books about touring. Bill Flanagan wrote an amazing book about a U2 tour in the early 90s. And the most interesting parts were not about the band, but were about the crack and the fun that the roadies were getting up to. How much have you missed that now in the last 15 months?
To be honest, I was sort of figuring out a way out of it towards the end. The first 5 years of touring were the funnest, you know, so much fun. It was just nonstop party. But then I started sort of looking after myself a bit better and realizing that that sort of lifestyle wasn't really that sustainable. Right. and when you sort of get out of the party mode, a lot of the appeal is sort of lost. Kind of,
right?
To me, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense.
But I just started sort of saving my money and being well behaved. And there's only so many like racket fueled bus parties, you know, and the same conversations that you hear over and over again. you know, it gets pretty small. The touring circuit gets pretty small after a few years. You sort of end up going to the same places over and over again. And but that was my social life over here. You know, I was mostly out on tour. So when I was off tour, it was sort of relax at home and chill out time. But my whole social life and all my friends and everyone that I knew over this side of the pond were people that I knew on the road. So, my world kind of, I guess it kind of shrunk a bit.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
On the road. And it was interesting how out of touch everyone felt, you know. There's only a very small number of fellow roadies that you actually stay in touch with when you're not on the road. You know, you're all best buddies when you're out, you know, sharing a bus together or traveling around together. And then once the show's over, you know, everyone goes their separate ways. And there might be, there's a small selection of people that I've stayed close with, but yeah.
Gabby, can I ask you this? I've heard from one or two people who work in music, work in theatre and stuff. And obviously, it's been a dreadful time for them. In terms of roadies and road crew and technical people, have they had any financial support from the government, you know, or is it a really bad time for many of these people now?
It's sort of a mixed bag. So my other half, who's a rigger, he didn't get a cent because he earned over the threshold. We're both freelancers, you know. If you're self-employed, you get help if you earned under a certain amount. If you earn over that amount, averaging over your past three years income, you didn't get anything. So I was just sharing what I got with him. Lots of my other mates, they were limited companies, so they sort of paid themselves a minimum amount to sort of, you know, be clever with the tax and everything. But then that came back to bite them in the ass, you know, when they're asking for your sort of. Actually, yeah. I don't actually think people who were a limited company got really anything. I know lots of my fellow crew didn't get anything. Yeah, so it's been rough. Yeah,
it's been very rough on the self-employed. Yeah. And what about now the noises that you're hearing coming out of the US and elsewhere that a jab is going to be necessary for work? Now, I know you said that you were easing your way out of it after, you know, doing it for so many years, but that's startling. I mean, we have heard that certain production companies or certain promoters have been talking about the need for fans to be jabbed to get into certain gigs. I know Elton John wants the fans jabbed. Springsteen wants the fans jabbed. But now the crew are hearing, or crews are hearing, that they will need to be jabbed. Is that right, in order to get a job?
Yeah, well, I was just kind of not really looking into it. I was just waiting to see what happened, really, and how it all went. I wasn't chasing any work. I was sort of, just waiting to see what happened. And my fella at the moment is working for another ex-rigger who's doing some landscaping in the time over in the meantime. And while my fella doesn't want to go anywhere near the jab, the other guy said he would. As soon as he gets a call for work, he would go get the jab if they required it. And he got a call for work. The first thing they asked him was, have you been vaccinated? So he went and got his. Interestingly, though, after going through his contract, this is for a job in the States, after looking through his contract, it says you'll be tested during the duration of the tour, and if at any point you come up positive, you're off the tour and you have to find your own flight back. So you're canned off the tour and with no flight home. So he was a bit.
So you're expect so he so he's expected to get the jab, and then to be regularly tested while the tour is progressing, and mm-hmm. and but go home at your own expense if you fail a test. That doesn't sound too appetizing to me now, Gabby.
No, I thought the same, but the tour that I was asked to go on, annoyingly, it's like one of my all-time favorite bands, but they've kind of gone down in my estimation if they're requiring their crew to get jabbed in order to work for them. But actually, when I was offered the job, I said, yeah, as long as the fact that I'm not vaccinated doesn't, affect it at all. And I was told that there's several venues in the States, and especially New York, that aren't allowing you in unless you're vaccinated, Madison Square Garden.
This is interesting. This is really interesting. So it just reminds me of something my pal Hayden told me months and months ago, that the private sector will ultimately drive this. So your potential employers are saying, all right, Gabby, fair enough about the jab, but it's the venues. The venues are saying that you need to be jabbed. That's how it's going to work, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah, it seems like it.
You saw the Eric Clapton interview, and I know you worked on Clapton tours. What did you make of that?
Say that again, sorry?
You saw the Eric Clapton interview, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I know you've worked on Eric Clapton tours before. What did you make of what he had to say?
Yeah, I mean, bless him. My heart went out to him because he seemed quite nervous about it, to be honest. And I was proud that he spoke out, but he just seemed like he had no other choice, really. And that was a really great interview to share with people like my parents, who don't like really listening to nobodies, but have a lot of respect for people like Clapton. He got a lot of people listening to him, so that was good. But of course, they say like, oh, that's just a one-off. Someone like really unlucky to have a reaction.
This is a problem for you, isn't it? You mentioned to me in your mail, you being Australian, that this has got more implications for you than just whether you work on a live tour again. It's also got implications for travelling back home and for your family. And I think you said your dad's had the AstraZeneca jabs. He's okay, though. He's been all right.
Well, kind of. I mean, this is absolutely shocking because when I did actually get home, I managed to fly back there over the, English winter, Australian summer for a couple of months. That's another story. And they're just in such a, I'm from the southwest of Australia in a really nice little sleepy surf town in the southwest. And it's like stepping back in time, Richie. It was like, they've just had no COVID there, but it's been hard lockdown borders, So it was kind of infuriating because all I heard was, oh, we're so lucky here, there's no virus. And I'm having to sort of hold my tongue a lot because if you've got to bring it up, it feels like you're sort of bringing everyone down. No one really wants to know about it. They just keep saying how lucky they are. But I begged my dad. He's very much, trust the science, and there's TV and radio blaring nonstop, and so that's on the airwaves for him.
How old is he, Gabby? How old is your dad?
Like 65.
So he's a young man then.
Oh, he's an absolute trooper. He's like, he runs a farm. He's a builder. He's a bit of a local legend, to be honest. He's very fit, very active, plays tennis, but he's got, he already had a heart problem, like an irregular heartbeat, and he was on blood thinners for that. But I had a phone call a few months ago saying that he'd had a minor stroke, and they upped the medication that he was on onto better blood thinners. So I was keeping a close eye on him after that, and also stressing to him, stay away from that jab, you know.
Because at this stage, after he had the minor stroke, at this stage, the AstraZeneca information was already out there that it was causing clotting problems in people, was it? It was
already exactly. Right. So I was sending him loads of stuff, and I was, you know, dropping, you know, just saying to him all the time, you know, make sure you stay away from it. And he kind of got a bit quiet on me, and I was like, oh my God, I wonder if he's actually had it. So I emailed his girlfriend, who sheepishly said, you know, yeah, he went out and got the jab 2 weeks after having his stroke, and they gave him the AZ jab along with the flu jab.
They gave him the AZ jab and the flu jab at the same time.
Yeah. So I almost, I was distraught, to be honest.
Yeah, but he's okay. There hasn't been any.
He's okay. Yeah, he's still kind of recovering from the stroke, so he's a bit low energy and not feeling quite right. And you don't know. Yeah, you just don't know how much to attribute to the jab, if that's had any effect on it or not, or what. You don't really know. But no, he's all right. He's all right.
Thank God, and let's hope he'll continue to be all right. Australia's gone basket case, hasn't it? New South Wales is basically in lockdown again, isn't it?
Mate, have you just seen over the past couple of days?
Yeah, I can't believe it, yeah. And you know, it's very important that people, because there will be people listening to this programme for the first time. Look at what's happening in Australia. As Australia now is going into autumn winter, right? Going into winter, effectively. Mm. Because what's happening there will happen here this winter, unless people put a stop to it. Unless people have the courage this winter to say, absolutely no way, we're having no more of this. I can't believe that in New South Wales, Gabby, people are so acquiescent to this. I thought at this stage, again, I'm naive. I thought at this stage they'd say, no, pull the other one, I'm not having it. But
it's not even just New South Wales. I think every state now has a different set of restrictions. And some places like South Australia, I don't even think they have any active cases, you know. But they're still mandating masks, and it's just a massive push because the vaccine uptake has been so low and so slow because, I think they've gone about it all wrong there, you know, as far as like trying to entice people to get the jab, because they've had hardly any deaths. And now they're suddenly trying to get everyone to get the jab, and people don't really see any justification for it.
So think it's blackmail then? Because blackmail, plain and we could say the same.
They're saying, you know, when can we start giving vaccinated people their freedom back? It's just, it's so blatantly obvious now. And, you know, they were really slow to sort of wake up to any of this, and I think many still haven't. They've just considered themselves so lucky, you know, they're all on JobKeeper, they're all getting a nice salary for not working, you know, doing all their local holidays within their states, you know, having a nice time and living normal life while it seemed like the rest of the world was in this chaos and thousands of people, you know, hundreds of thousands of people dying from this virus.
Yeah.
And those
people are stupid, Gabby. It might sound very unfair. They must be stupid, because even the most completely enthralled person to the agenda must know that eventually these bastards are going to turn off the magic money tap, and they're going to say to people, oh God, we've got no money now because we owe the bank so much, so we can't continue to furlough you. Oh, and by the way, your job is gone. I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah.
They must understand this.
You'd think so.
Wouldn't you?
I mean, we didn't stop working the whole way through. As soon as we had our tours cancelled for the year, I went straight out and got a delivery job. I had a van sitting there that I was meant to be going travelling around Europe on, and I figured the only people still working were delivery drivers, so I went and did some delivering for a garden centre. And, you've just been picking up odd jobs the whole way through. So, you know, I wasn't just going to sit there on my arse and wait for things to get back to normal. We kept on tripping through, but the situation in Australia is pretty upsetting because, I don't know when I'll make it back again. That I endured the hotel quarantine in December last year to go see my family.
in Australia. So when you landed back home, you had to go into a hotel, yeah?
Yeah, with no fresh air for 2 weeks. Not even a window that opened. And they wouldn't let me out.
Am I right in saying, wasn't the Australian approach to quarantine hotels a bit more serious than it is here? Did you have armed guards there and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was like, yeah. You know, I've spent a lot of time in hotels, so I've no illusion that they're, you know, these wonderful, exciting places to stay. Like, you know, I kind of dread staying in hotels now, no matter how nice they are. I mean, it was a lovely hotel, lovely new hotel, but the windows didn't open. And yeah, there were army officers outside. And there were people guarding each floor. So, you know, a few people sat outside people's rooms on each floor. You couldn't even step outside your room.
You couldn't step outside your room even?
No.
This is like something out of a dystopian science fiction movie, isn't it? This is supposed to be Australia. When I think Australia, over the years, you know, look, it's going to sound a bit silly and childish. When I think Australia over the years, I think of Australian television programmes. I think of a very liberal, easygoing, you know, fun-loving, sun-loving people. Mm. And you're telling me armed, and I know this to be true because I saw the photographs, armed guards on every floor to make sure that an Australian citizen stayed in her room for 2 weeks.
Well, there were hotel staff on each floor. There were armed army guys outside the hotel when you arrive. You know, it was quite a threatening sort of, yeah. Normally when I usually go home to Perth, well, south of Perth, every year when the touring dies off over here and gets quiet over the winter, and I can't handle the winter here, so I go and spend the summer back home.
What do you mean you can't handle the winter here? What's that all about? We don't have cold winters here.
Well, I'm bracing for this one.
Scabby. Go on anyway. So you go back for, understandably, you go back to see the family as well.
Yeah, normally I land in Perth and it's like this really wonderful feeling, and you step outside of the airport and the air is warm and sweet. You know, I know the smell of the air, and it's just, you know, some, you know, loving family member is there to pick me up and drive me down south. And it was just such a different experience this time. You know, I was sort of, we met at the airport. You know, I haven't worn a mask, Richie, the whole time through this whole thing,
good,
apart from when I landed in Perth. And they basically put one on your
because
face.
Because I was just going to ask you, because they insisted. And yes, and would this put you off going back now? I mean, you've already answered the question. I mean, you obviously love your dad, of course you do, and your family. But having to go through that again, 2 weeks of being in that hotel with armed guards, was that put you off going back home now?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm not really sure. I'm just going to have to wait it out. You know, people are starting to get really frustrated over there.
I hope you're right, Gabby. Do you know, you said that to me, and somebody said to me this morning in a Skype message, oh, Richie, people are getting really fed up in the UK. And I think, really? Are they? Because all I see is the Liverpool Street Vaccination Centre in Salford just rammed every day. All I see is absolute dipsticks, you know, absolute wet wipes, sanitary pads. That's what I see these people as, useless, walking around on the streets, Gabby, with some masks on them in glorious sunshine.
I'll tell you something, Richie. My perception has changed a little bit over the weekend, not only because of the protest, but I was actually working at a motorcycle festival. We had a stall there. I was helping out someone who had a stall there, and there were about 7,000 punters there, and there were signs around the place, like, for instance, when you went to the bar or went into the public toilets, put your mask on, you know, signs everywhere. No, I did not see a single person obey. Everyone walked past these signs, which blew me away.
Which
I was
is
like,
brilliant.
This is,
yeah,
this is
brilliant.
The biggest display of civil disobedience I've seen since. And I think now that most of these people have been double jabbed, they're like, well, I'm jabbed now. And actually, even down at our local shop, you know, they've been pretty strict with it all the time. My fella always comes up against them and, you know, has to say, no, I'm exempt. You know, I don't need to wear a mask. But the last time, the woman behind the counter said, oh, you can take that down. You know, I've had both jabs now.
Now, this is new. This is very new.
Yeah,
you're touching on something that I never considered. What if those who've had the two jabs, because they're totally in love with the system and everything else, most of them will still be nice people. Just because they've had the jabs doesn't mean that they're not nice people. They're probably conscientious people, many of them. Yes, yeah. What about, you're touching on a lovely possibility, which is what if many of them say, look, stop all this nonsense now. We've had our jabs. I don't care if Gabby hasn't had her jab. I don't care if that bald gammon in Manchester hasn't had his jab. Just let them do whatever they want. They're no threat to me. Yes.
It does seem that out in the real world, because, we see all these posts from, in the media and everything, like really, really coming down on the unvaccinated and that it's all our fault and everything. But, out in the real world, it seems I don't feel any sort of blame being put on us lot, They keep saying, oh, they'll lock us down again because of some other variant or because they'll blame the Indians or something like that. And I have to sort of remind them that, and people like me who don't want the jab, and they're like, oh, yeah, and all the unvaccinated,
There is something important that needs to happen, though, and it needs to happen soon. Yeah. The hospitality, if we want to call it industry, not only here but elsewhere, they really need to grow a spine now. And they need to tell governments, no, we are not going to get in bed with any stupid vaccination passport scheme. We're going to let people come in now. Enough is enough. We don't care. We're not going to ask them about jabs or any of that nonsense. And that needs to happen. And I think that's on a knife edge. That could go either way. I've heard publicans on television, genuine publicans, say, well, yes, we will be asking people, we will expect people to show that they've been jabbed. But I've also heard others say, no, we don't want any part of that. So that's important.
It seems that most people just respect that people should have the right to choose.
Yeah.
In my experience, all our neighbours and everyone around us has all been jabbed, but they totally respect our choice. Everyone that I've spoken to is like, you should have the choice. I'd say to that, just don't give any of those places your business. Actively seek out smaller businesses that are welcoming to you,
Like my mate Laura. Give Laura a mention in the railway in there in Cheshire and Moberly in Cheshire. So tell me this, I meant to ask you. I was going to ask you and then I didn't. When you flew back to Perth, did you have to have a mask on that plane for the duration of that flight?
You just pretend that you're eating the whole time.
Is that right? Okay, so you're constantly nibbling stuff.
Yeah, every time someone walks past, you just sort of pretend to chew on something. And then the other thing I did, because, of course, you have all the seats next to you are all empty. Of course, there's someone directly in front of you and someone directly behind you. But, you have a bit of room to stretch out. And I just put a shawl over my head and faced the window, and I wasn't bothered the whole time.
Fantastic.
Little tricks,
Yeah, and I suppose as well, flight attendants, they've more to be doing than chasing people around a plane to see if they got a mask on. It depends on the crew you get, I suppose, if you're on a plane. I've not been on a plane since all this began. And like yourself, I've not worn a mask.
It's kind of gone, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't know when I'll ever be on a plane again. Gabby's been brilliant speaking to you. Fascinating experiences. Love the fact that you absolutely partied the bejesus out of it for years on tours, but you've gotten tired of that. But very interesting information about touring in the near future and how crew will probably need to have a jab to get a job. And of course, it's not the only business that we're hearing about where staff are being told they might need to have a jab even. It's going to be very interesting in the next few months.
How they go, because they might, I bet they'll have be seeing a fairly big crew shortage after all this. There's probably lots of touring crew been doing it for years, and then over the past year have realised that life outside of roading is actually quite nice. Well, we'll see. Lots of them are just desperate and will do absolutely anything. They'll sell their souls for rock and roll is what lots of them will do.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd sell my soul. I'd love to experience it, though. I'd love to have travelled with a band that I like. I mean, given the chance now, given the opportunity, I'd have loved to have done an American tour with Bob Seger. and a silver bullet band. Oh. Well, being a big fan of Bob, you know.
I noticed you're a Simply Red fan. I did a Simply Red tour.
Oh, you did a Simply Red tour, did you? I hope he's a nice guy, Mick Hucknall. Is there any dirt on Mick that we should know about?
Oh, is he all right? There's lots. I mean, I was operating a camera from in the pit, so it got a bit thrusty at times, you know.
Did he?
It was tight leather trousers. It wasn't it wasn't the best experience.
No.
Being at some crotch height.
X-rated. Yeah, yeah. We saw him at the arena a few years back. Well, he's a fantastic singer. It's The Voice for me. I get laughed at. How can you be into, you know, Seeger, and how can you be into all these bands that you're into, these older bands? And like him, it's always been The Voice for him. He's got an amazing singing voice. But yeah, I'd love to have experienced it just the one time. I'm 46 now, so it's never going to happen. And but I can fantasize.
We never know. We never know what's going to happen. You know, anything could happen at this point. I mean... Yeah, I guess just, you know, trying to...
Never say never.
Never say never. You know, always live like something incredible is going to happen at any minute.
Absolutely right. Gabby, thanks for getting in touch. Loved reading your email and loved chatting with you. Do stay in touch with us. Are you on Twitter by any chance?
I'm not on Twitter, no. Email probably is best, or Skype.
Yeah, no, I was just going to mention, if you are on Twitter, I would have sent people your way to chat with you on Twitter. Thanks for sharing those experiences with us. Very valuable, Gabby. All the best to your other half as well, by the way. And as I said, it was great chatting, and do stay in touch.
Nice one. I'll get you some new Aussie listeners.
Do, Gabby. Thanks very much.
Nice one, Richie. Cheers.
Bye for now. That's Gabriella, who is obviously from Perth and has spent some years... in the rock and roll touring business, and has come to understand that it's going to be the case that riggers and crew are going to need to be vaccinated in order to keep their jobs and to work on tours into the future. It's exactly 2 minutes to the top of the hour. It's half time in the England-Germany game at Wembley in the last 16, and apparently it's 0-0. So neither you nor I are missing very much. Do keep in touch with me during the programme. It's BBGRichie, that's my Twitter handle. And as I pointed out to you already, you can find me or reach me through the website. If you'd like to send me a message during the programme and you don't have Twitter like Gabby, you can do so by using the contact form on richieallen.co.uk. I look forward to hearing from you. Speaking of rock and roll touring... this is from an album called 1984 on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. This is Van Halen and Jump. Van Halen, Jump on the Richie Allen Show. 3 minutes past 6 o'clock. It is Tuesday's programme. Lovely warm afternoon, evening here in Salford. Thanks so much for all of your messages, by the way. Number of you are still convinced that the Chris Whitty altercation on Sunday at St. James's Park in London was staged, but you've not offered any proof of it. So you can think what you like. I don't know whether it was or whether it wasn't, but I do know that not everything is staged, you see. I do know that. It is the case that things actually do happen from time to time. Idiots do exist, you know. Alan in Liverpool, who has worked, of course, in live touring as a roadie. He's also a musician, as a bass technician, as a guitar tech. He says, Richie, why do you think I'm not working as a lampy at the moment, other than not many events? I guessed some moons ago that venues would enforce a vax-only policy. I don't know if I'll go back to it. I'm just waiting to be told wedding venues will want to know my status for gigs. Like I said, a lot of people are going to be in that boat, not just in the entertainment business, but in many other aspects, in many other areas of employment. People are going to be finding that their employers will be asking them about their vaccination status. And we're going to see a lot more of that as we get into the autumn. Not so much now. It'll happen now, but as we get into the autumn, you're going to see quite a bit of that as well. All right. A lot of uncomplimentary things being said about Chris Whitty. Listen, I share your point of view when it comes to Chris Whitty. Just read the article on richieallen.co.uk. No love for the man. Given the opportunity, given the opportunity, I would see him in court, in some court of law somewhere, to answer for what I believe to be crimes. Telling lies, knowingly lying about a virus, knowingly lying about measures needed to contain a virus. Lying while knowing that those measures are going to kill people and ruin people. Of course, I have no time for Chris Whitty, and I have never defended him. But I don't like violence. I don't approve of it, and I never will. Not as a means to dealing with these people or solving problems, absolutely not. All righty then. What are we? Coming up for 5:30 past 6 o'clock. I'm looking forward to speaking with my guests in a moment. They are doctors, and they're not alone, by the way, in basically coming under fire from the General Medical Council in this country, which has been going after doctors, not just recently, but for years. Doctors who don't toe the line when it comes to, I suppose, what you might call accepted medical practice, when it comes to prescribing medications, right? Brilliant article in The Conservative Woman by Sally Beck last month. Sally was in touch with me. And Sally has actually very kindly helped set up this hour. And all credit to Sally. Do check her out on The Conservative Woman. I did tweet a link to the article this afternoon. Medical tyranny is getting progressively worse in this country, as we've seen with the hard sell accompanying the COVID-19 vaccination rollout. This is Sally's article. This pattern has been creeping up on us for years, and doctors using treatments or therapies that are not drug-based or who criticise recommended drugs and therapies are at risk of being reported to the General Medical Council, which governs all registered doctors and surgeons and holds ultimate power over the careers of so-called rogue practitioners. Its remit allows it to strike off any doctor for serious professional misconduct, and it erased 90 doctors from the medical register last year. So last year in 2020, 90 doctors were struck off in the UK. Now, not all of them will have been struck off simply because they disagree with a recommended treatment or propose an alternative treatment. Yes, some of them will presumably have been struck off for good reason, for serious medical malpractice, but not all of them. And I'm really looking forward to chatting with Dr. Sarah Myhill and Dr. Jane Dunnigan in a couple of minutes' time. Before I do that, I'm going to take another tune. It's Baccarat and Yes Sir I Can Boogie. All right, stay with me. I'm sure you'll have lots to say about my next guest. You can do so through Twitter and through my email. Right, let's kill the music then. It's 6:10. The Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, here in the northwest of the UK. Beautiful evening, and it's still 0-0 in the England-Germany game at Wembley. At least it was a moment ago, in any case. Look, I read you some of Sally's excellent article in The Conservative Woman. It's very concerning, this. As Sally said, 90 doctors erased from the medical register last year. It stands to reason, as I said a moment ago, that not all of those doctors were guilty of gross misconduct or very serious medical malpractice. In some cases, these are doctors who have expressed an opinion or offered an alternative treatment, maybe, to a patient. And in some cases, vitamins. It's a brilliant article. As I said, check it out, The Conservative Woman. I've tweeted a link out to it already. We're going to speak this hour to two doctors who've had experience of this. Not to be melodramatic, but witch hunts, really. You know, people coming after them for, as I said, something as innocuous as presenting another point of view or another opinion. Let's welcome to the programme Dr. Sarah Myhill and Dr. Jane Dunnigan. Ladies, thanks so much for giving us your time this afternoon. You're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Richie, for inviting us.
Yes, thank you.
It's a real honour. Thanks for giving us your time. I'm sure it isn't easy. Sarah, we'll start with you. Brilliant work by Sally in The Conservative Woman, and thanks again to Sally for setting it up and for coming on. You've been investigated by the General Medical Council 38 times over using vitamins. Is that right? Tell us more.
That is correct. I'm a record holder.
Yeah.
I worked as an NHS GP between 1982 and 2000 with no complaints ever from anybody. I then moved into independent practice because I started to get interested in nutritional medicine and naturopathic medicine. And that is all about asking the question why. You know, why does somebody have a headache? Why does somebody have high blood pressure? You know, why does somebody have heart disease? Because if you know what the why is, then you can treat it from root causes. And those root causes are all about diets, supplements, detoxification regimes, and so on. And since, of course, the General Medical Council did not like my opinions. And I have never had any patient ever complain about me. I've never been reported to the GMC by a patient. I've only ever been reported either by other doctors who don't understand what I'm doing, sometimes health authorities, sometimes the General Medical Council itself. And all the complaints I have won every single complaint. The present score is My Hill 38, GMC nil. But they continue to come after me. And quite honestly, I've got so fed up with it. I have now deregistered and I work as a naturopathic physician.
Yeah, it was common to that you deregistered, which is, well, it's not good for your patients or your previous, well, of course, they can still see you, of course, but it's not good for the NHS. So tell me this then, you said that it wasn't coming from your patients, which it wasn't, it was coming from other doctors, maybe it was coming from the council themselves. Why do you think 38 times, Sarah? Like, why did they not accept that, you know, they had no case against you? Where was the pressure coming on them? Was there some pressure being, yeah.
I just wish I knew the answer to that.
Yeah.
I mean, just to give you an example, you know, one of the a very, very useful tool is vitamin B12 by injection. You know, side effects, nil. Safety, you know, very high. Nobody's ever died or had any problems with vitamin B12 injection. Yet it's a fantastic tool for detoxing people, for improving energy levels, for methylation. It's a very important tool. The GMC has investigated me on 8 separate occasions for my advocacy of vitamin B12 injections. They know full well all that I'm going to say because my arguments in every single case have been exactly the same. So you explain that because I can't.
I certainly cannot. Let's bring Jane in. We'll obviously, we're going to have a general chat, all three of us. So feel free to jump in at any time. And I'm happy to sit here and listen to both of you. Jane, thanks for coming on as well. We start with you back in 2002. You were accused, serious accusation against you, which must have been very distressing at the time, of peddling junk science. And this was about you testifying on behalf of a couple of mothers who didn't want their children to have the MMR vaccine. From what I understand, and I looked into this now separately of Sally's article, I looked into it myself. Nothing wrong with what you were doing, Jane. You basically said, listen, no vaccinations are risk-free. And you went and testified or went to bat for these two mothers, but it had consequences for you back then.
It did indeed. And it wasn't just the MMR, it was all the vaccines. And there were two mothers who weren't related in any sense, but the judges amalgamated the cases because they were so similar. And it was very interesting because initially the legal aid board wouldn't pay for an expert for them because they said there wouldn't be any expert that would support their case. And as you know, experts are not there to support somebody's case. No. They're there to give an expert opinion. And to give the judge his due, he did say, you know, you need to get somebody. And they got me because they couldn't find anybody else to do it because there were doctors in the United States, but they had to be registered in the UK. And there were people who weren't doctors. But they had to be registered doctors. So I eventually took it on. And I was pretty surprised when I saw the expert reports for the fathers and the separate expert report for the children, because they're about 3 pages long. And they just said the diseases all kill you. The vaccines are all safe and effective. You should just have them. And so it was a really backbreaking work for me to actually bring the amount of information that you would need to show the judge, not that he was impressed by my argument, that there was another way of looking at it, which you've just simplified really in one sentence, which is, you know, they're not compulsory and there are other ways of obtaining health. And my actual final comment was that in a case, irrespective of all the evidence that I'd brought, was in a case where two parents split up and they can't decide on whatever issues, that the person with day-to-day care should make the decision, because they're the people who are going to have to live with it and look after the children with the consequences. You wouldn't think it was earth-shattering.
No, and in those cases, the children were going to be with their mums, right? Which is...
Mostly,
yeah. And it's amazing. The GMC, the General Medical Council, investigated you based on newspaper stories. And there was a hearing. You won, obviously. You were cleared because you did nothing
wrong.
Well,
it was no way can it be described as obvious. In fact, it started in 2004. It was the same week, actually, that they accused Andrew Wakefield of serious professional misconduct. And the big package came to me the same week. Initially, my team thought I was just a bit misguided. This is my defence team. We pay lots and lots of money in order to have someone give us legal advice and defend us when such things happen. It's usually to protect us from claims by the public, but all my ones have been spent really protecting me from claims by the GMC mostly. But then they got the expert report a couple of years later from the GMC expert, a Dr. David Ellerman, who was in fact the lead consultant in charge of management in the Baby P case at Great Ormond Street. And they said in all the time they'd be defending doctors, they'd never seen a statement by a doctor about a professional colleague that was so scathing and so critical. And so that the panel would be enormously impressed because he was very eminent and I was very not eminent. And so they actually recommended that I agree to all the charges that the GMC had accused me of, and they do a deal in that I wouldn't lose my registration.
No way. Based on the idea that this guy was some superstar doctor, that you should just basically stay quiet and accept the... So yeah, you're right to pull me up when I said it wasn't obvious. It obviously went on for 3 years.
It wasn't obvious till the very last day. And when I asked in my naivety, I said to them, my reputation has always been more important to me than my registration. Could I have a second opinion, please? And they actually said, well, you know, if you want to stand on a soapbox and beat your drum, you can do that, but we're not going to support you to do that. So my whole team withdrew and left me 6 weeks before the case.
No.
And then I managed to find a lawyer called Mr. Clifford Miller, who was not a medical lawyer. He was a patents lawyer. And he took my case on. And then, thank goodness, my medical defense team agreed to pay for him. And he got a brilliant barrister called Mr. Ian Stern, and transformed the case. And that's the only reason that I got off. But it wasn't obvious till the actual decision was announced by the panel. Although the behaviour of the expert witness was, you can read the transcript, anybody who wants to, it's available to the public. But many of the points, he just had to withdraw because they weren't based on anything, and he was wrong. He even agreed that he'd been nitpicking.
He agreed he was nitpicking. Yeah, I've looked at quite a bit of this, and in the end, obviously, they found in your favour. Despite the fact that you'd had all these negative newspaper stories, the papers basically ignored the fact that you'd been cleared, and of course this is standard in the media. And of course, what listener, we're getting a lot of tweets now, unsurprisingly, on this. Sarah, you come back in, by all means come back in here. People want to know, how common is this, doctors being targeted for doing their job, for offering an expert opinion? Because in Sally's article, and I didn't know this, 80 GPs were struck off last year, as I mentioned earlier, obviously not all of them for gross medical negligence or misconduct. We wonder, Sarah, come back in, how common is this, doctors being put under pressure like this?
Well, it seems to me that the General Medical Council is targeting functional doctors. And a very great many colleagues that I have worked with have been similarly harassed. For example, Dr. Patrick Kingsley, Dr. Gordon Skinner, Dr. Hugh, I've forgotten the surname now, but doctors who practice functional medicine know that they are targets for the General Medical Council. And most of them deliberately practice medicine a very low profile. They don't have websites, you know, they don't song and jump around and shout about the pros and cons of this, that and the other. They just quietly get on with their work. And what you will find is that the complaints against the functional doctors do not come from patients. The complaints come from either other doctors, because, you know, if I see a patient as a doctor, then of course I have to inform that GP. And if that of the GP of that patient, and if that GP doesn't agree, I get reported to the General Medical Council. And it's for ridiculous things like, as I said, B12 injections, like magnesium injections, for example, recommending thyroid hormones. All these things I've had endless hearings about, and every single case I have won. After my first couple of hearings, or my first hearing rather, or rather my first investigation, I was unable to get medical defence cover from the insurance companies. And so I had to defend myself. And I have to say, that was the best thing that happened to me.
Why?
It's because it was very clear at the hearings that this was a matter of opinion. And all my opinions, I could back up with good scientific evidence. And that's what I did. And what was so fascinating about the GMC expert witnesses is they were very poor quality indeed. And some of the best fun I had was cross-examining the GMC's expert witnesses, saying, where's the evidence base for that statement? I mean, for example, you know, in Jane's case, which is about vaccination, there is a general assumption that vaccines are safe, but they're not. There's a fascinating study that was published in Africa, Guinea, New Bissau, which was called the natural experiment. And it just so happened there's a window of time when there were funds there for these children in this African country to be vaccinated. And then there was a window of time when there were not the funds for those children to be vaccinated. So we had two groups of children, identical environment. And they followed up, said, well, what happened to those children? And vaccination increased the death rate fivefold in the children who were vaccinated. So, you know, there's very good evidence that actually, you know, vaccination was killing children.
Hardly efficacious. And in fact, it was doing, you know, immeasurable harm. Well, it was fatal. It doesn't get any worse than that. And Jane, and I know there was a piece in the Times about you, wasn't there? About something you said when you were back in my country, you were back in Ireland.
I was in the Emerald Isle.
You're in the Emerald
Isle.
Yeah,
they called me a British doctor. I was most insulted because I'm Irish.
You're Irish, I know that. Yeah, and they called you British. It's funny, the thing that annoyed you most, they said you were British. Tell us about that. Again, you gave an honest and, you know, I would have said fairly balanced answer to a question, and they're coming after you over that. What happened?
Well, there was a newspaper reporter from the Times, who I think must have been the Irish Times. I think he must have been asleep through the whole of the day because he obviously taped something, but he wasn't really interested until suddenly at the end, somebody started saying, oh, but why do they vaccinate? Why do they vaccinate? And tell us about the Secretary of State. And so I actually said, I can't tell you why they vaccinate. That's one of the accusations currently against me by the GMC, because I should be able to tell people why they vaccinate. And the thing is, one of the things that I'm currently registered, but I'm under conditions. This is since November 2019, because the wheels grind very slowly. I'm not allowed to be the lead clinician in charge of, to prescribe, administer, or advise on childhood vaccination. And so he was saying, well, you shouldn't have been giving that lecture. But I never tell people, in terms of advice, I don't tell people to vaccinate or not vaccinate. And it's the same with other procedures. I give them information, because the person who's the sovereign person of their own body is the patient. And I know that patient comes from the Latin patior, which means to suffer. But they're not supposed to be suffering at our hands. They're supposed to be suffering at the hands of the disease. And we're supposed to be curing occasionally and comforting always.
And
you
know,
can't do much about it.
Just before Sarah comes back in, do you share Sarah's opinion that, and I'm going to wrongly paraphrase what Sarah said. You can jump down my throat, Sarah, and you can correct me. But you know, the idea that a lot of medicine seems to be treating the symptoms that people are experiencing rather than dealing with the underlying cause. And I've heard that quite a bit on this program over the years from qualified doctors like yourselves, be it from America or Ireland or elsewhere. Is that a concern of yours? Has that been a concern of yours during your career, Jane?
Not throughout my whole career, because my career has evolved and evolved as I've looked into laterally, sideways, at more and more different ways of healing people. Because I just used to think that, you know, where you gave antibiotics, you gave things to take down the fever, the symptom was the problem. And as I've studied other types of health healing and philosophy, I've realized that basically what we do in ordinary medicine is it's a bit like having a car with not enough oil. The little red light comes on and we say, oh, that little red light makes me feel really anxious. I know what I'll do. I'll just unscrew the bulb. Oh, I feel so much better now. And of course, all the holistic, naturopathic, functional medicine disciplines, we all know that the red light's not the problem. The low oil is the problem. And the last thing you want to do is take away the signal, because then you'll forget when you're at home or at the petrol station to fill up.
It's a brilliant analogy. Before Sarah comes back in, we've got Dr. Sarah Myhill and Dr. Jane Donegan live on the radio this afternoon, thanks to an excellent piece in The Conservative Woman by Sally Beck about how the General Medical Council is seemingly, and I believe it is happening, there's evidence of it elsewhere as well, is going after doctors. I love the way you described it, Sarah, functional doctors, doctors doing their jobs, you know, administering vitamin B12 injections, something I had when I was a young boy and I was very unwell. My GP would have given me those and recommended that I take vitamin D3 and zinc and vitamin C. And this is happening seemingly a lot. And it's obviously very worrying for doctors. And I suppose it's sending out a message to new doctors or qualified doctors that you should toe the line.
And, shut up.
Yeah, and do what you're told. Sarah, so yeah, obviously then, Sarah, you've got to wonder, is the General Medical Council, and this is speculation on my behalf, is it being put under pressure by a pharmaceutical lobby? Is that where this ultimately goes, or is that just too simplistic?
Well, that is a very plausible explanation because, you know, as Jane points out, modern conventional medicine has boiled down to simple algorithms. You know, headache is paracetamol deficiency. High cholesterol is statin deficiency. You know, depression is SSRI deficiency. There is no proper analysis. There's no proper thinking going into, well, why do people have these symptoms? But of course, A, it's a very simple way to practice medicine, and B, it makes lots and lots and lots and lots of money for big pharma. And, you know, when there's any debate between truth and power, you know, guess who wins? Power always wins, and big pharma has lots of money. I mean, I remember when I was a medical student in the 1970s being told then that big pharma spent on average £20 per doctor per week on drug promotion. Now, that was 50 years ago. It's going to be a lot more now. And it has got to the state where doctors have been, they've been pressed, they've been pushed into these, treating their patients with these very simple paradigms, and they are no longer practicing good medicine. And GPs are now leaving the NHS at a faster rate than ever before because they are so unhappy and dissatisfied with how they are being made to practice medicine. Just to give an example today, I've been talking with a lovely doctor, Dr. Sam White. He was a general worked in general practice, and he realised the danger and the toxicity of the COVID-19 vaccines, and he refused to administer them. And as a result of this, he has been suspended from his job. And today, he's had a hearing today, not from the GMC, but from the NHS. Now, we are highly trained professionals. You know, Jane, like myself, we've worked in general practice for 30, 40 years.
Yes.
And we are not allowed a freedom of speech. We are not allowed freedom of medical opinion. You know, I tell my patients what I think is best for them. And that might be diet, it might be vitamin C, it might be vitamin D or whatever. And on all those issues, I have been attacked by the General Medical Council on the grounds that I'm a bad doctor because the advice I give does not conform with NICE guidelines.
It's funny, Jane, just before you come back in, Jane, our family GP in Waterford, who's just about retired now, wonderful woman, and she worked with two other wonderful women, the Corbett sisters, and her name was Audrey Farrell. I was told by one of those doctors many moons ago when I got my start in radio that the pharma people, the reps were never out of the office, constantly in there, you know. And there was some scandal about tickets being given for concerts and holidays being given to doctors. And I put it to our family doctor. I said, have you had this sort of stuff, these sorts of contacts? And she said, yeah. And she said, Richie, I needn't tell you what I do to them. You know, she ran them out of the office, old school. But this was going on, you know. And, yes. and that's no surprise to you, Jane.
No, it's not a surprise at all. But in terms of now doctors follow algorithms, and patients who don't want to follow those algorithms, some doctors, because they're under such pressure, actually feel hostile towards patients who won't agree to the algorithms, because the doctors feel that they're protected if they follow the algorithms, and they feel that if they don't, they might be hauled up in front of the GMC. So it's not there's no longer the doctor-patient relationship anymore. But there is one particular piece of NICE guidance, which has been in place since 2007, which says that you shouldn't give something to lower the fever, which is paracetamol or ibuprofen, for the sole purpose of lowering a fever in an otherwise well person, and don't give it to stop febrile convulsions. And that was 2007, so that was, 14 years ago. In 2013, they upped it to say, do not give paracetamol and ibuprofen to children to stop febrile convulsions, and only give them for distress. Only as long as there's distress, don't give them both together. Only consider giving the other one if the distress returns before the dose of the first one is due. So we're talking about, as Sarah was saying, you take it because you've got a headache, if that's what you want to do. Whereas there are so many parents who are being browbeaten into giving their children paracetamol and ibuprofen. You must give it because you must bring down the temperature. You will get a febrile convulsion. And there's even people in A&E departments being told that they're going to get referred to social services right now in the A&E department if they don't allow people to, the doctors and nurses, to administer paracetamol or ibuprofen. And one particular patient that told me about this, when you have a discharge, you put the diagnosis, which in this case was febrile convulsion, into the computer, and it comes out with some blurb. And the blurb that came out was, do not give fever. So febrile convulsions are due to the speed of the temperature rise, not the height, and do not give paracetamol or ibuprofen for this purpose. So in the very department where they had threatened this mother with social services, the actual algorithm information that came out on the discharge summary was what she'd been telling them.
No way.
Brilliant.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yes.
And this is somebody who might have been reported to social services for sticking to their guns.
Well, she didn't stick to her guns in the end. She let them give them the paracetamol because she was too scared. And so you would be in a department when you're already upset because your child's had a first febrile convulsion, as any parent would be. It's very scary. And that's what happened. And all over the country. So I get criticised about, for example, a vaccination, even though I'm following the guidance and the law now since 2015 in the UK, Montgomery, on giving the information you need to have for informed consent. But all around the country, doctors are ignoring the guidance on paracetamol. We prescribe gallons and gallons of it. And of course, it's not without its sequelae. Because when you keep on giving it and suppressing the fever and making the liver now have to break it down, you actually cause more invasive disease. And so there are many cases where it's not the disease that's made the child have the bad outcome. It's the so-called standard medical treatment, which is no longer standard.
I can absolutely back that one up, because my special area of interest are patients with post-viral fatigue syndromes. And so often that is triggered by a viral infection. It's a post-viral syndrome. They develop a chronic fatigue. Now, we have symptoms for very good reasons. We have symptoms because that kills the infection that's causing the problem. You know, bacteria and viruses are temperature sensitive, so we run a fever. We cough to physically expel the virus or the bacteria. We have diarrhea. You know, we have all those symptoms are to reduce the infectious load and to help the body fight it. Now, if you symptom suppress an acute infection like that, it's much more likely to become chronic. And many patients that I see with chronic fatigue syndrome, ME, they have chronic Epstein-Barr virus infection. You know, they've picked up the infection often at university. They haven't mounted a sufficiently effective immune response, and that virus has made itself at home permanently in the body and is making them ill. So symptom-suppressing medication for an acute infection is very dangerous in the long term.
Now, this is interesting, both of you, because this kind of brings us to coronavirus. We've got Dr. Sarah Myhill and Dr. Jane Donegan live on the programme. We've been talking about the General Medical Council, how it treats doctors, functional doctors, as Sarah called them, you know, who use their experience and their knowledge to treat people using, whether it's vitamins injections, whether it's vitamin D, or zinc or whatever, and how that can land them in hot water. Sarah holds the record in the UK. You got a lovely attitude about that, Sarah, it must be said. 38 times investigated by the GMC for doing her job, and Jane has had similar problems as well for doing her job. Now, none of you know anything about me, so I'll tell you basically what I think. Obviously, I'm a layman, so I know nothing. I'm not an anti-vax person, never have been. And I know nothing about viruses or infections other than what I can find in books, in library books, in other books. Often we've had a big old tome, the old British Medical Journal book with all the information about various illnesses and what have you. But I do know that there is a big problem here in the UK, and you touched on this yourselves. It's exactly the same thing you've been experiencing, but different. We have virologists, we have epidemiologists who have gone to the same universities you've gone to, they've gotten their degrees, and they've effectively been blacklisted by the UK media because they say things like, we have gone absolutely overboard with locking down, we shouldn't have locked down, it's a terrible measure to deal with controlling a virus. Or they've said things like, you know, coronavirus is a problem, but it's not a problem for the vast majority of people, and so on, so on, so on. You know this, Hennigan, Sunetra Gupta, many of them have been have basically been blacklisted. It's been a crazy 15 months, and now we have these so-called vaccines. And I said I'm not anti-vaccine because I'm going to make this point. I will not have one of these vaccines. And you mentioned Jane, or maybe it was you, Sarah, but I think it might have been Jane, about a doctor who won't, in good conscience, administer the vaccine. I've become very friendly with a very respected doctor called Dr. Marcus De Bruyn, who works out of Rush in Dublin, who closed his practice late last year, and he wouldn't do it either. And as a guy who knows nothing now, ladies, doctors, I have to err on the side of caution. So when people like Marcus De Bruyn and others are saying, I'm not sure this thing is safe or efficacious, I then have to say, well, you know, I'm not saying that Marcus De Bruyn is more intelligent or he's better than Chris Whitty or some guy in the JCVI, but I know he's equally as qualified in some aspects, so I'm going to decline. Now, either of you can jump in on this one, because I suppose this is the biggest issue of our time now, this vaccine. Yeah. Who wants to go first?
Me.
Sarah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
The point about coronavirus is that if you have good nutritional status, the virus is not a problem at all. And what I like all my patients to do is take vitamin C, 5 grams a day, vitamin D, 10,000 international units daily, do a low carbohydrate diet because sugars and carbohydrates encourage infection. And with those three things in place, your death rate, your risk of death from coronavirus is effectively zero. Now, with good nutritional techniques like that, the vaccine becomes completely irrelevant.
Because it worked.
I totted up since 2014. I think I've had about 14,000 patients through my hands, some of which, I think not 14,000, about 7,000 through my hands. And, you know, I'm in touch with them by email and they do my basic regimes. And these are sick patients. You know, they're already ill. Problems, zero. And they, you know, I'm quite sure I've had coronavirus at some stage and I will have natural immunity. So a vaccine becomes even more irrelevant. I mean, the immune system has been dealing with viruses for hundreds of thousands of years. It's intelligent. It's clever. Give the immune system the raw materials it needs and these diseases become irrelevant.
Jane?
Yeah, I can't agree more. I don't know what to add. I mean, the thing about the whole coronavirus virus anyway is that we know in terms of how many people had it, we know that those figures are wrong. So the only way you can actually find out what effect this virus had and how bad it is on people's health is to actually look at the total death rate and not the total death rate, the actual total death rate per 100,000 individuals, because obviously if your population's bigger, you'll have more deaths. And you have to standardize it for age, because obviously if you're 80, you're more likely to die this year than someone who's 16, we hope. And we have those figures from Freedom of Information from the Office for National Statistics for last year. And last year was the highest death rate in the previous 10 years, but not by much. The difference between about 1,000 per 100,000 and 1,090 per 100,000. But if you look back to 2000, which seems very recent to me, it's the ninth highest death rate. in the UK, and if standardised for age. And if you look back to the 90s, to 1990, the 30 years, it's the 19th highest death rate. So where was the pandemic epidemic anyway?
That's a fascinating statistic, Jane. I hadn't heard that one, I have to say.
I didn't either.
The one that I looked up is crude death rates per 1,000 of the population. And in 2017, 9.4 people died per 1,000 of the population. 2018, 9.4. 2019, 9.4. 2020, 9.4. Crude death rates have been unchanged since COVID came on board. You know, we are not killing more people.
Except we probably would have had a lower death rate last year had we not taken the steps we took because of the virus, which is throwing all those people out of hospital into old age homes and not letting the 999 emergency ambulances visit if they were called, not letting the GPs called and putting them all for do not resuscitate. The same with people in hospitals and giving them, putting on so many people on ventilators when that wasn't the correct treatment.
That's important, that point, because you were talking about locking people into care homes where we know they were not given the supplements that, you know, that Sarah talked about at the very beginning of the programme. We know that many of these places were poorly ventilated. And again, I've had doctors...
They never open the windows.
Never open the windows.
I mean, one of the good things about COVID is they've started opening the windows.
And that's astonishing to two qualified women like yourselves that you wouldn't open the windows in a care home and allow a kind of a transfer, a flow of air.
I'll tell you something really funny. I used to work in a practice on a Friday morning for many years in Islington, and they got moved from their 1950s practice to a super new practice, and the new practice had no windows, so there was no natural daylight in any of the nurses' or doctors' room, no natural daylight and no natural ventilation. And I said to them, how can I sit here and tell people about the importance of fresh air and sunlight when I'm in this room that stinks of formalin because I can't even open the windows to get the smell away? And so I stopped working there. That was the new approved building. So it's no wonder everyone's so sick when, you know, that's what they see at their GP surgery.
I've been asked to put a question to both of you. Quite a few people are asking this. How come there's been so little questioning? And not necessarily... I'm not asking why has there been so little questioning from GPs, but people in general, why has this, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I'm going to call it propaganda, this media propaganda about this deadly virus. I know enough to know that it isn't deadly for the great majority of us. Why has there been so little questioning? That must puzzle both of you.
Well, it does. And I got into trouble. British doctor, what does it compares WHO to using, say, that says they're using Nazi techniques or something. Yeah. You know, we have all this education about the Holocaust over and over again, even though there's been genocides, 2-3 million Indonesians and whatever. Ever since then, we carry on doing it, but we keep on saying that that was the one and we're never going to do it again. Everyone learns about Anne Frank and they say, oh, well, I'd have kept her in my cellar. I'd have kept all those Jews in my cellar. I'd never have told on them. And they have in some ways insinuated that there was something about the German people that made them do something that none of us would ever have done. And yet in this last year, we've seen exactly what happened in 1930s Germany, you know, ringing up the police. Hello. My neighbour's daughter's just visited her and she's not in her bubble, you know?
Yeah.
So tell me what the difference is.
Can you believe that, Sarah? This snitching that went on last year. Incredible.
Well, it is astonishing the power of propaganda over the press from intelligent and clever people. It's almost as if they've been, it's a brainwashing that's taken place. And, you know, I have no idea what the other agenda is, but there has to be another agenda because what is happening at the moment has no basis in science and facts are being distorted and we are being misled as a nation.
And now, by the way, Sarah, by the way, let me jump in there and say this. We have a lot of listeners, this programme, and there will be people listening who don't like the opinions that you've expressed. Listen loud and clear to what Dr. Sarah Myhill said there. She doesn't know what the agenda is. I don't know what the agenda is. I might have opinions, but I don't know. Because what happens with people like yourselves when you speak out, both of you, not speaking out on this programme, but anywhere, is you get these ad hominem attacks, these dreadful yes. attacks, all your crazy conspiracy theories. I suppose you think that the lizard people are running things. But of course, you're not saying that. You're speaking simply. Exactly.
Nobody knows what the answer. Well, somebody knows, but not me.
Yeah, you're speaking as expert general practitioners who have an understanding of medicine. Exclusively. You're not saying that little green men or lizard men or anybody else is behind this agenda. And I want to make that bloody clear. You're speaking as experts. So
yeah, that's a very good point, Richie. And what I would say is, you know, listen, look at the facts, listen to the science. The reason I've had 38-0 against the General Medical Council is because I've defended myself at all the hearings and I have presented the facts and I have presented the science, and that is why I've won on every single occasion. At least they have the decency to listen to the science. And this is what I would beg your listeners to do. Listen to the science. Look at it with your own eyes. Don't listen to what somebody says about the science or what somebody says about the test. Go and look at it yourself firsthand. And that's what Jay and I have got into trouble for, by just saying, here's the science. Go and look at it.
I'm a bit concerned. Jane, you come back in on this. I'm concerned that because the jabs are in trial for another couple of years or another year or two or another year and a half or whatever, and because we don't normally get vaccines as quick as these ones have come into existence, that I remember pandemics. I covered it, you know, back in yes. my MSM days. My concern is that we're going to see injuries. That's just pure speculation. And I certainly wouldn't be putting words in.
It's going to be much worse than pandemics. And pandemics is very similar in that there was a model created by the famous Professor Neil Ferguson from Imperial.
Yeah.
We rushed through a vaccine. We gave the manufacturers indemnity, which is not unusual. We give the manufacturers indemnity for all vaccines. And it was sent through under emergency authorization. And when the reports started coming in about narcolepsy, which is when the children, you just fall asleep all the time. You can't be left across a road or drive a car or try and study because you have these attacks of just falling asleep. They're ignored in exactly the same way as the blood clotting. You know, in Europe, there were countries like Germany saying, oh, we're not going to use the AstraZeneca vaccine now in over 65-year-olds. I mean, it wasn't tested in over 55-year-olds, only 12%. And when it was either, I can't remember whether it's 17 or 27 countries had stopped using it, this country was still saying we're thoroughly and rigorously testing all these vaccines, and we're analysing all these adverse reports, and the balance is that we still recommend you should have the vaccine. And then they changed because they were forced to from outside, not because they were looking out for our health. And the same's happening with myocarditis, and the same thing happened with the narcolepsy. So when you are injured by a vaccine, number one, you get called anti-vaccine, which of course you aren't, because otherwise you wouldn't either have had it yourself or given it to your children. Many people think that if they've actually got the package insert and they've found the thing that's happened to them on the package insert, that means they can say the vaccine caused it. But actually, on the package insert, there is no causality there. The manufacturers, who have billions of dollars, lots of laboratories, people in white coats, they don't have to show causally that what they put as an undesirable effect is caused by their vaccine. They just say, we've noticed this, it's been reported. But if you or your child are injured with no billions of dollars, no laboratories and no white coats, you have to prove causally that that vaccine did it. And they've actually done it in the case of the pandemics vaccine. And so the test case went to court, and that meant everybody else should have got their payout, which is not much. It's 120,000, you know, for a ruined life.
Do you know what, James?
What the government then said was, we're not paying out because it was a faulty vaccine. And the manufacturers then said, quite correctly, you indemnified us.
You indemnified us.
And so who's left? There's the government on one side, or the Department of Health. There's the manufacturers on the other side. And in the middle are the parents of these children who are now in their 20s, who've been looking after these children since 2009, these injured, permanently injured children. And they're not getting any help at all.
No, they're not. That's a fact. I'm not challenging any of this because it's true. I know this to be true. Sarah, one of the things I've been looking at through the government's own website, obviously, and in the US as well, that the yellow card reporting system here, and also the VAERS system in the United States. Now, I know this is self-reporting. I know that. So, you know, you can't say it's 100% accurate, but it does appear that there are lots of people saying that they've been very badly affected in one way or another by having one of these jabs. And I am reminded of the fact that some years ago, it seemed to be easier to halt a vaccine rollout. In fact, the threshold of injuries was much, much, much lower than it is now. Again, just being totally honest, and if I can be objective, there's no good reason why they should not suspend the rollout of these jabs. That's just my opinion. All the evidence is there that they should at least say now, this is my opinion, that we should stop giving people these jabs until we know more. Sarah, what do you think?
Well, what we should be doing is giving patients proper informed consent so they can make up their own minds. Now, you mentioned the yellow card system, which is a passive way of reporting. It's not actively following up every patient's had a vaccine. It's passive. And what that means is the yellow card system is a massive underreporting of what's gone on. But we have the figures up until the 26th of May of this year. And in total, we've had 1,253 deaths following the vaccine, together with 888,000 adverse drug reactions, which include anything from neurological damage, blindness, 300 people gone blind, loss of hearing, speech or smell, pregnancy, miscarriages, women with menstrual abnormalities, immune system abnormalities, bleeding, clotting. I mean, these are very serious diseases. Mm. And are patients who are currently being offered COVID-19 vaccines informed of this? No, they are not.
They're not being told. There's enough there then to warrant a suspension of the administering of these jabs. There's enough there. I'm mindful of the fact that we've got about 4 minutes left. Thanks for both of your, you know, candour, to be honest, and your expertise. I'd like, I suppose, to get a final word from each of you on where we came in. It is worrying to the layman here, right? I need a doctor from time to time. It's very worrying for me that the General Medical Council will be hounding and harassing people like yourselves because you're genuinely looking out for what is actually best for me rather than what some big pharmaceutical company wants to put into me. So to finish on where we came in, what if anything can be done about that? Do you need doctors to stand up against the GMC? How does it work? Jane, you come in and then we'll let Sarah wrap it up then. Jane.
I think the GMC is broken, and what we really need is a new system for registering, or a different system for registering doctors and other healthcare professionals that doesn't, that allows people to follow their ethics and first do no harm. And the ideals, which certainly at the time that I was at medical school, which was a similar time to Sarah, that were inculcated into us, first do no harm.
Sarah?
Yes, I entirely agree with that. But what I would say to you as an individual is, yeah, look at the studies, follow the facts. You know, don't listen to the propaganda. There was a lovely little cartoon that I saw, which was a reporter interviewing the Amish, a member of the Amish tribe. Now, the Amish people, as you know, are a little tribe that live in America, and they live their lives as we would have lived it 50 years ago. They do everything by hand, and they have organic agriculture and so on. And when he asked the leader of the tribe, or leader of the community, you know, and what about COVID-19? Do you have many cases here? And he said, no, because we don't watch television.
Fantastic.
And that sums it up. You know, yes. It's all over the media,
Pennsylvania,
all over
yeah.
the radio, this false facts that are pouring out all the time. So, you know, please, you've got to act for yourself and act for your family. And what I would say is, please look at the facts. I mean, Jane and I are both a part of a group which is called UK Medical Freedom Alliance. We have a website up there and we only publish the facts and the scientific studies. So if you want to have a look at the real, true, raw data, please go to UK Medical Freedom Alliance and see it for yourself.
Brilliant. Do us a favour, both of you, do in a few weeks' time, do come back on when you've got a free hour. It'd be lovely to chat with you more generally about, you know, how the approach to treating people has changed, because you've just been across it yourselves over the last 3-4 decades, not to be giving your ages away or anything like that, but you gave your own ages away by saying that. I'd like to stay in touch with you, and thanks for your courage. And I do mean that. It sounds very cliched, but it means a lot to me. You know, I've been in the media a long time, like yourselves, you know, I say like yourselves, in my career, you know, working in commercial and national media, and I've seen terrible changes there. So I'd love to stay in touch, and just sincere thanks for your time today, both of you.
Richie, just ask and I shall appear.
Lovely, Sarah.
Thank you, Richie, and God bless.
And you too, Jane. Thanks a million. You've been listening to Dr. Sarah Moyhill and Dr. Jane Dunnigan, who have experienced, they've had their own experiences of being targeted by the General Medical Council in this country 38 times for Sarah. And Jane has had some very serious issues to deal with over the years as well, for doing their jobs effectively, for giving, you know, considered, learned, educated opinions to their patients. And that's a very important issue, that. And they spoke very candidly as well, of course, about coronavirus, what it is, and the treatments being offered, and the vaccine. So thanks again to Dr. Sarah Moyhill and Dr. Jane Dunnigan. And if I don't forget, and I shouldn't forget, thanks to Sally Beck for, well, production, really. Sally wrote the article in The Conservative Woman, and Sally arranged Sarah and Jane to come on the programme. So massive thanks to Sally Beck. Do read The Conservative Woman. It's a brilliant read. It's one of those publications. It's kind of like one of the last ones standing, where you get absolute, you know, honest reporting on these issues. So well done, all concerned. Thank you so much for that. That's it for the programme. I can tell you that England look very much like they've beaten Germany 2-0 in the last 16 of the European Championships. There'll be absolute celebrations around Salford this evening, no doubt about that. So well done, England. Thanks to Sarah, to Jane, to Sally, and thanks to Gabby in the first hour. Loved chatting to Gabby, the roadie, about her experiences in the last 15 months as well. Going out of the programme with the Lightning Seeds, back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock for the Richie Allen Show. Wednesday's programme tomorrow at 5. Look after yourself. See you tomorrow. Hasta mañana.